This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When Jane McIntyre took over as executive director of United Way of the Central Carolinas, the agency was struggling to overcome a controversy surrounding the seven-figure retirement package of her predecessor, as well as some questionable expenditures. There were also serious questions about the transparency of operations at United Way. Well, the controversy struck just as the economy declined and the need for services provided by United Way rose, and that is not a good combination. Jane McIntyre has been busy making changes at the agency in an effort to restore public confidence, and she joins us for the hour to talk about what is being done. Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me back.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Russell Schwartz, Vice President of Administration at the United Way of the Central Carolinas, a position he was persuaded to take in September of last year, and in full disclosure, Russell and I used to work together in another universe.
It's good to see you, Mike.
Good to see you as well. Welcome back, Jane. The last time you were here, you hadn't even taken over yet.
I had not even started.
You were days away from taking over. It was like a week after it was announced that you would be taking the job, and I asked you a lot of questions that you could not, in all fairness, answer. No human being could have answered those questions because you hadn't gotten your feet wet yet.
Yeah.
And I was taken to task by a listener in that program for asking you these impolite questions that you couldn't answer. But the questions needed to be asked.
They did.
And you did your best to answer them, and the ones you couldn't answer, you didn't answer.
But I can now answer.
Well, that's why you're back.
Yeah,
so
I can now
before we look at the changes that you have made in your, well, about a year now, I guess, at the United Way, let's talk about the disposition of all the legal ramifications surrounding Gloria Pace King and her departure. Has all that been settled?
No. I would say it's probably just beginning. So it has really just seriously started. There have been a lot of appeals. You've read about everything has really been in the media out there. So you pretty much, the listeners know what I know, but no, it has not.
Okay, and that's not what you're focusing on. You're focusing on the future and the present and repairing things that have been damaged. You were on the board of the United Way during her leadership, and the board was in the dark about a lot of things going on, not because of her, I don't think, but just because of the way the organization was structured.
The structure of it, I would
agree. The majority of the board was in the dark about a lot of the things that have come to light and a lot of the things that have gotten the agency in trouble. Since you have taken over as director, have you uncovered things that surprised you going forward?
Well, it was wonderful. I went back and I actually listened to our show, and I realized how much I knew and how much I did not know. And one of the listeners sent an email about a bureaucracy, and I keep wondering, did they work there? Because I said, I remember my answer, and it was so very naive, which was, oh, it's a small organization. How hard could it be?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you, I call it the smallest big bureaucracy I've ever seen. It is a major bureaucracy. But it's not based over the last 10 years. It's decades, like 30 years it's gone on. And so we have had a lot of fun but a lot of challenges taking apart a small organization that was very bureaucratic every angle of it.
And, Mike, this United Way in Charlotte was incorporated in 1957. So you got everything gets bolted on and gets bolted on and added on, and seldom do things get cleared away.
Right.
You know from my experience as a lawyer working with Federal Communications Commission, you know, I'm accustomed to a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of paperwork, but I was really surprised when Jane persuaded me to come on board about the number of policies. And that is not a criticism of us in Charlotte. We're part of a national organization that's been around for many, many years. And any organization that's over 50 years old, you have to take a fresh look at from time to time and say, well, wait a minute, why do we have to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go back and look at that original policy. Maybe we could find a way to make that more efficient.
Change is always uncomfortable, and it's uncomfortable because it's scary. When you dismantle things because they're unwieldy, because they've become unwieldy over time, that scares a lot of people. Does it scare the leadership as well? Maybe these things are here for a reason, and if I take them apart, the whole thing will collapse?
Well, I think there was a lot of fear on the staff's part, quite frankly, that you know what you're doing. So we were cautious, but we still changed it. And finally, sometimes you just have to change it and pray that it'll all work, shake out and work out fine. And every time it has, the amount of change, that's been the other big surprise for me, is I knew we had to change, but I remember on the show, I said, well, we need to really tweak it we are not tweaking it. We've kind of taken, it's like a puzzle with 1,000 pieces, and we've dumped it out, and we're putting it back, but you sort of start from the middle out. There's not a structure. So every single inch of it, how we relate to the community, how we relate to everyone, has changed, is changing. So it's a major, major problem.
So is, has it, have there been internal pains as well as external pains, as external organizations now have to deal with you in a different way and with perhaps different people?
Yeah, I think so. I think certainly on the internal side, people are fearful of change. I mean, I think that's true in any organization. It's uncomfortable. People cling to what they know. I think that as a result of the age of the organization, and the, that sort of internal focus had developed about, well, we've got to make sure we comply with our policy. And people are uncomfortable stepping away from that. But what guides us at the United Way, all of us at the United Way, are three things: the donors, the agencies, and the volunteers. And we just tried to focus on those things and strip away anything which doesn't advance the interests of the donors, the agencies, or the volunteers.
And as I understand it, Russell, you are the person that what's the word I'm looking for? Decisions are made by Jane and others, and then you're the one that has to make it happen.
I'm the grease between the gears. Yeah, I try to keep it turning.
You must be well loved.
No, not especially. Grease gets ground on a lot, but it's, you know, I mean, my experience is with bureaucracy. You know, we worked for a company. It was owned by an insurance company.
Right.
We had a lot of policies and procedures. But, yeah, people are uncomfortable, but I think that people have been remarkably resilient internally in terms of saying, okay, are you sure this is actually going to benefit the agencies and the donors and the volunteers? And once they see that it is, I think that people have been very resilient.
And I want to say one thing, excuse me, about the staff. I think the staff, it took to about the 10-month mark. But at the end of 10 months of change, and really – Russell and I both, but I was the bearer of a lot of bad news. And I finally decided right before the new year, I just couldn't give any more bad years news this year. It would have to be next year. But the staff at the end of 10 months, I started to see them believe and say, hey, it is working. Hey, it is okay. The world's not going to come to an end with these changes.
Back in the day before you took over, you were on the board, and as I said, the board was in the dark about a lot of things because that's the way it was structured. Only the top three or four or five people knew a lot of things that were going on. Today, do board members know what's going on?
Well, we do not have an executive committee, and the board is small. We have 22 members. The role that I was playing is an ex officio non-voting member. So we have someone that represents the agencies, but is
you were on the board because you were the head of the YWCA, a recipient agency.
Right, and I was a volunteer representing at that time 97 agencies. And so we have that, but it is in a non-voting capacity, just as an advisory kind of thing. The board is fully engaged. The meetings are lots of meetings. And they are for me, they are a dream board. They are everything you would expect from the full board.
A dream board because?
Well, they're so fully engaged. They care. They've helped us. They advise. They counsel. And they do not want to make any mistakes.
The old board was 67 people large. The new one, as you said, is down to 22 people. What impact has that had on the organization internally and also in association with the businesses that you have to interface with? Because a lot of these people go back and represent you to the companies that they work for. So now you only have 22 people doing that.
It seems to be working fine because we still call on volunteers, and I would say that's kind of the last surprise for me was the community. When I was here with you a year ago, I really thought the community would be the most difficult part. And I'm not saying it has not been hard work, but the community in this region is so good, and they want to believe, and they really have been so supportive, most of them. Now, obviously not all, and you'll never have 100%. But overall, I have been very surprised, and it has made my work and our work a lot easier.
Transparency, it seems to me, was very important to initiate because trust had to be restored, and there were some things that were not terribly transparent prior to your taking over. One of those things is something called the Blue Book, which I'd never heard of. But the Blue Book is something that you have now put on the web. It was always kept pretty close to the vest, and it's out there on the web right now for anybody to see. What is the Blue Book?
The Blue Book is actually where all the donor dollars go, to every organization.
Why was that not published before?
I don't know. That's a very interesting question. I have no idea. I mean, there's really nothing in it that should be secret. So maybe I don't. I really do not know.
Yeah, I don't know if it was secret. It wasn't. It wasn't promoted. Certainly.
It's also 60 pages long. Maybe you didn't want to print it back in the old days, but now it's on the internet, so you don't have to print
it. Right. Right. Yep. And let me go back to the board for a minute, Mike. I think previously the board was a promotional board. What I would call a promotional board. If you ran a television station, you were going to be on that board because it wasn't a governance board. And I think with 22 people, it's far more of an oversight and a governance board. So. To Jane's comment, they're far more involved.
Well, that's what I was getting at when I asked, are you being impacted by the smaller board in the community? Because, as you say, a lot of people were there just to help promote the United Way, and when you haven't got those people doing that, how do you do what you were doing before?
Well, I'm going to give my personal view first, which is I think sometimes you can rely on a crutch too easily. Mm-hmm. I think we have to make the value proposition for why is the United Way important to the community, as opposed to saying, well, you know, he's on our board. I hope you're going to donate.
Right.
It shouldn't be because he or she's on the board. It should be rather because it's important to the community. It's important to help our neighbors.
But you took away that crutch at the same time you were facing severe economic downturn in the community at large, and donations were down because of the downfall of the economy and also because of what was going on at the United Way. So you take away a crutch at the very time you need the crutch. What has just simply being able to go out and say, here's why we're important, been helpful?
Oh, yeah. It's been very helpful, and it's I don't even think that I knew how important United Way was. I knew it from one side, from only one point of reference. And now I see it, and they've got incredible data. One of the strengths of United Way is I cannot believe the accurate data they have in-house, but you got to ask the right questions. And so one of the questions I asked a while back is, so how much has United Way raised that's really gone to the community? Not for operations, not for anything. How much has actually gone to the community? And in 5 years, six campaigns, $113 million. Well, in the nonprofit world, that is a significant amount of money in health and human services. Mm-hmm. And that is just in this five-county region. I am only counting those dollars with that number. So it has made a significant difference. And when you take what it did for the organization I was in and transpose that over all those organizations, the impact is terrific. It's tremendous. And I realize now it's truly one of our greatest assets, but it had to be changed.
Right. In 2008, 2009, the United Way went through a difficult time because, as I said, the economy and also the controversy, a $14 million drop in donations in 2008 and dramatic cuts to the 96 affiliates. How much of that tough time can be attributed to the economy versus the controversy, or do you know?
I don't know. We've tried to figure it out, and there's no way to project.
I think the truth is, no matter what, the United Way was going to change because of the significant changes. I mean, when you go up the street to our two largest corporate citizens. Mm-hmm. So it was going to change no matter what.
That's Russell Schwartz, who's Vice President of Administration. Jane McIntyre is also with us. She's the Executive Director of United Way of the Central Carolinas. We'll continue in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Procure 4, international procurement management specialists dedicated to creating sustainable long-term value for business owners through supply chain improvement initiatives. Procure4.com. And Temlan Electric Services, providing comprehensive electrical services to homeowners, real estate investors, and property managers with green technologies and lighting design. Details, TEMLANElectric.com. Last month, we spent an hour with Elaine Marshall, the Secretary of State in North Carolina and a Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate. Now it is Dr. Mike Beatler's turn. Dr. Beatler is the Libertarian candidate, a former banker turned teacher turned consultant. He also hosts an internet radio program focusing on libertarian issues, and that is why he is the libertarian candidate. We'll talk to him for an hour tomorrow about what he sees as the issues facing the state of North Carolina and the United States and his solutions.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the tale of a wimpy kid from the Bronx who became one of the 20th century's most famous voices of satire and dissent. Playwright, author, and Village Voice cartoonist Jules Pfeiffer on finding his life's work.
It's the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 FM WFAE, your NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today, Jane McIntyre, Executive Director of the United Way of the Central Carolinas. Russell Schwartz is also with us, the Vice President of Administration, the guy who comes in and executes all of the decisions that are being made as they try to rebuild United Way. Have you begun to recover?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. I think you have our change list. We kind of quit keeping after a year. We still keep it internally, but it's grown. It's a lot of changes. Some are small, some are tactical, some are strategic, some are just plain financial. But when you have got to raise and must raise more money to give back to the community, it's a simple formula. You cut internal costs and you figure out how to generate more dollars. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did.
One of the big costs, obviously, that led to all of this and led to your taking over the agency was the level of retirement or pension compensation that your predecessor was able to negotiate, in which the board granted her, and which the argument continues on as the court case goes on. How have compensation and pension issues been altered under your leadership?
Well, right now we've done what's called a soft freeze on the pension so that I would not go into it effective August 26th.
So you will not be involved in it?
In the pension, correct. Correct.
Wow.
And we do have a 403B, which is the nonprofit world equivalent of a 401K.
Uh-huh.
But for employees from Jane forward, which would include me, we aren't in the pension. We're only in the equivalent of a 401K.
Okay.
And right now, mine is, and it will change, we'd like to move to no pension. And have the 403B and have a contribution for our employees, which gives them flexibility. It does not make us liable, as Russell has pointed out to me, and it's the right thing to do. It's what most companies have done, and so we need to move that way quickly.
You know, in the pension, the employer, in essence, takes the investment risk mm-hmm. because you've got to continue to fund the pension at the defined benefit level. So we're looking at that, and we're going to get with benefit consultants to try to find a way to formulate that in a fashion that obviously rewards length of service for an employee but is also reasonable for the organization.
So longer-term employees who have been there for a while have been covered under the pension will
Correct.
Retain that pension?
Correct.
So you'll retain that liability until
Correct.
They are no longer on the pension
yes.
plan. Your task also is to regain the public trust and rebuild and reinvest in an organization that probably suffered internally because of the revelations that came out in the news. And also an organization that has calcified over 30 years. Which has been the more difficult thing for you? The going through the organization and looking at how cumbersome it had become since 1957 and paring it down or rebuilding trust? Which is the more difficult?
Oh, I think
task?
The internal's been by far the hardest. That's the surprise. We've gone from an organization of 97 employees to about under 45 today. And you would think, how hard could it be? Let me just tell you, it's hard. And when you talk with CEOs or heads of companies that go through change in a large scale, they have identical problems to the problems that we've experienced, that I've experienced. And it is frustrating. It is frustrating to not even do it more quickly, but I think we have moved very fast and still done our work because mm-hmm. there was still a job to do.
Right.
I think that's really important. There are a lot of moving parts to raising over $20 million to benefit over 93 agencies in the community. That it, you know, people are not just sitting around. There's a lot to do, and it's hard to make those changes and still accomplish what you need to accomplish.
And you've laid off half the force.
Yes. Yes.
There's been a half reduction in force.
Yes, and I did not do all that. You know, a lot of them were gone when I arrived.
Mm-hmm.
Call that the heavy lifting. So that was moved out, and it's been a reduction probably of about 10 to 12 more.
So those who remain behind are doing what most American workers are doing, twice the work or more.
Yes. Yeah, you've got to do more with less, and that's part of the efficiency aspect is we do have fewer people. So you've got to look at, well, we used to do these 12 reports. Well, do we still have the manpower to do those reports? How essential? Let's just do these 6 reports because we don't have the people to do it.
Right.
And it's choosing what you do. Some of the things we did aren't necessary, so we've opted not to do them.
For instance?
For instance, the combined federal and state campaign. It really generates very little dollars for this community, for this region. But we did it. We were compensated by them for doing this, but it's so much work and so much effort and takes staff time. So we have a contract that we could not get out of. So when we finish it this year, we will find another organization that wants to run the combined federal and state campaign, and we will let them have it because it is one of those things we need to walk away from.
Well, and we've also become more nimble, I think, on the fundraising side in terms of previously, there were reports that had to go to the volunteer committee that then went to another committee that then made a decision. And now the decisions are just made. Staff just, the volunteer committee is certainly kept informed. But before you go to meet with a potential donor company, there's not 7 levels of approval.
And how did it get to 7 levels? It's simply over the years, it became a process that seemed right at the time. And I would also assume that because the agency was growing, there needed to be more layers put on until it became untenable.
Yeah, I think that's all part of it. I think that the size of the campaign and the number of volunteers involved in the process. And of course, if you volunteer, you volunteer, I volunteer. When a volunteer shows up, you want to make sure you give them something to do.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they're not very interested in participating.
And I think there's another important thing to remember, and that is that because of the age of the organization, I had a conversation with Don Sanders, who was a number of years ago, and he said it was a bureaucracy then. But you see, business was done differently then. It was a very different world we live in. Today, people don't like or want to work within bureaucracy. Information is much more public. It should be more public. So there was a lot that existed, and that's why I said it's decades. It's not just 10 years or 20 years. It is at least 30-plus years that it's been created. Mm-hmm. So I think that is part of why it is so complex for us to take it apart.
What's the biggest change in your view that you've made so far?
I think focusing only, and it was one of the first changes we made, and I look back and somebody said, that is such a risk, and I saw it as no risk. We had to do it, and that was only focusing on the dollars that are raised that go back to the community.
The community care fund.
So last year I can tell you that $16.5 million went directly back to United Way agencies. That's a combination of predominantly the Community Care Fund and a few designations.
Let's talk about it, because this came as a surprise to me when you were on the show last year, and we talked about a lot of different things, and one of the things was that not all of the money raised at the time was going back to the community. Some of the money that was being raised was going to places like colleges and universities, which I didn't, and I don't think a lot of other people associated with United Way. United Way was to help needy people or ill people or people, you know, that didn't seem to fit. And so what you say, you've jettisoned that?
Yes. We went to it really, really right after I was on the show,
mm-hmm.
or I would have told you. I was like, I didn't know it on that day. The Levine stepped forward with that $1 million match that was strictly for Community Care Fund. So that helped, that gave the leverage that we needed to move to only have a goal to raise more.
So the Community Care Fund is the fund that we all think about when we think about the United
Way. It is the only relevant dollars. It is the only dollars that matter.
You know, as a donor for 28 years, I sort of saw it evolve from the donor perspective. We had very large corporate participation in the campaign, and if you were a high-ranking official in a corporation that wanted to send a lot of money to your college, but you wanted to be recognized at the highest possible level in the United Way, a Tocqueville donor of over $10,000, well, I'm going to send the money to my college because that's who I really want to support, but I'm still going to get credit within my company for being a Tocqueville donor.
So it was a kind of a subversion of what the United Way was all about.
I, from a my perspective as a donor, that's not what I think of as United Way.
And I will tell you that we actually had a policy, mm-hmm. and this is a policy we chose to put back in place. And it had not been observed for a few years. I don't know how long. And the policy was very clear on how companies could choose to have their employees' gifts to go. So we went back and actually put that policy in place this past year. It was the first time in a number of years. And so I had to turn down gifts. And, you know, when you're a fundraiser, you do not like telling someone you're not going to take their money. And two of these gifts were over $10,000. And so I had conversations with the individuals, one on the phone, one face-to-face, to try to explain that this was one of the things that got us off track and gave the public the wrong perception of what was really being generated. Mm-hmm. To, just like you said it, to help people in need, to help those most in need.
So how much money, how percentage-wise, was going to things like universities and colleges and things that were beyond the scope of the community care fund prior to this change? 10%, 5%, 20%?
Let me tell you, it's complex. So, for mm-hmm. example, some of the monies that are raised here go to other United Ways across the country.
Okay.
So you transferred here from Oregon.
Right.
You were really concerned about the hunger in Oregon, mm-hmm. and you've been transferred by your company. You can give through this United Way to the United Way in the county where you grew up.
Okay.
And it's still going for health and human services, but it's not necessarily in this community.
So that's why it's complex.
But yes. We should not count those dollars.
And we don't count that in our community care fund.
Okay.
But in the United Way system, which is worldwide now, you can donate within one United Way to benefit the community in another United Way.
And there are also health and human service agencies in North and South Carolina. And we also, for some companies, accept those pledges, if that's what the company deemed, and we send those. Those are not added into that.
What we really want to do, Mike, is partner with area employers, partner with any donor, to help them fulfill their philanthropic need. We don't want to intimidate. We don't want companies to intimidate employees. We don't want people to feel like their arm's been twisted. We want them to be inspired to give. Mm-hmm. We want to help them help our neighbors. And that's the philosophy. And
is that a new philosophy, or has that been the philosophy?
I think it's always been the philosophy. I think that it lost some of its focus. Mm-hmm. I think that in the drive to have a bigger campaign than your adjacent company's campaign, that there was arm twisting, and the United Way was a happy beneficiary. It wasn't instigating it. But I mean, people who donate should donate because they really want to help. They shouldn't donate because they're going to get a pin. They should donate because they want to help
was
the community.
Was part of this competition, and this city was built on competition.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Was an inter-business competition. So is part of that, did part of that compensation in the past, or competition from the past, come from the fact that you had all these board members at these various institutions, working at these various institutions, and now that they're gone from your board, you've pared it down, that competition won't be as intense, that arm twisting perhaps that some people may have experienced won't be as intense?
You know, I think that we have stressed no arm twisting, and I know your arm was twisted in the past,
yeah.
And I'm sorry. Thank you for giving, but I'm sorry it was twisted. I would have much preferred you give because you want to give. I do think companies believe, and this is the part I didn't know, they do believe that they want to expose their employees in a collective way to philanthropy and to helping people that have less than they do. That is a culture of many companies. Mm-hmm. That is the right way to approach it. Have fun with it, help it build team, help people that have good jobs recognize there are a lot of people that don't have the same kind of jobs and don't have what any of us have.
But the competition aspect is a short-term benefit. Mm-hmm. It's not a long, doesn't long-term inspire long-term donors. We want to educate people about the needs in the community. We've got a 5-county community needs assessment underway in conjunction with the Urban Institute at UNCC to help better define the needs. We want to provide that education, and then we want to provide an efficient way where people can help alleviate that need.
You've hired a reinvention consulting firm. Is that correct?
A single person.
Okay.
And I call her the low bono consultant. I want to stress that because she is not what most people listening will think of as consultants. She is national, but she lives in Charlotte.
Uh-huh.
And she has an office at United Way. She still teaches in Indiana at the School of Philanthropy. She writes books. Her name is Carla Williams. And Carla has led that side of the track. So everything from focus groups to small group discussions to surveys to individuals to best practice teams, I mean, the scope is tremendous. And Carla leads that effort. Obviously, we are informed. We participate in it. Everyone, but it's donors, it's agencies, it's staff. She started with the internal staff.
So she's collecting information and then making recommendations to you on how to reinvent the organization?
Yes, and the recommendations come from a wider, it's not just her recommendations, it comes from a team of staff or volunteers that are also doing it.
And it's being implemented along and along. We're not waiting till the end to say, okay, here's the big report. Mm-hmm. Any number of the changes that we've implemented are a result of that sort of reinvention process.
We talked a little bit about the pension being phased out and going to what did you call it, a
403B
situation. You walked away. When you left the YWCA, you had a pension, and you walked away from that.
I still have it out there in New York somewhere, so it'll come when I decide. But I do want to say, and I want to be very clear, I was getting a 7% match. It's a YW. And I get that today at United Way in the 403B. And we're going to do that for the other staff as they come into it until we change the whole thing. And if we change it and the contribution, Mike, is only 5%, then mine will go to 5%.
Okay.
So it's very important that mine be the same, I believe, that mine be the same as all of the other staff at United Way. Mm-hmm.
And you also you got a raise from what you were making at YWCA, but you've taken a significant salary cut from your predecessor. I don't know the exact figures, somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000+ that she was making versus $140,000+ that you're making. That's a significant change. Does that help morale internally for people knowing that you're not making a gazillion dollars off your efforts?
Well, we also ask, I don't know if it helped morale, we went back to the senior staff that were there, and this year we asked them, to take a 5%.
That must have gone over big.
Yeah, well, I said I was the bearer of bad news, but we did that.
You know, we did that essentially to help fund raises for staff that's making $70,000 or less, or $60,000 or less. There have been no changes in salary for over 2 years. So starting in January, we'll begin phasing in people's increases, and the reduction in senior staff pay will offset that. So it's budget neutral.
How many people are making more than six figures?
I actually looked because I remembered you'd ask that, and I didn't know. And right now, after the 5% cut, I believe there's one, and that's our chief financial officer, Shelley White. Mm-hmm. And she makes under 120.
Put that into some sort of context for either United Ways around the country or for other philanthropic nonprofit
organizations? It's not that. It's probably fairly in line for a chief financial officer. She's a CPA. Mm-hmm. She's been there a number of years, and I think sometimes you do have to look at the number of years that employees have been in place and done good work. So that would be the other piece. I believe there were two other employees that were making slightly over $100,000, and theirs is slightly under now because of the 5%.
Jane McIntyre is Executive Director of the United Way of Central Carolina. She's here along with Russell Schwartz, Vice President of Administration. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the other changes that have been instituted in the last year there to pare down the organization, be more economical and save money and make more sense. And we'll take your questions and calls as well. Stay with the Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Levine Cancer Institute at Carolina's healthcare system, changing the course of cancer care. Details at www.levinecancerinstitute.org. And by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. Knight Foundation promotes informed and engaged communities and helps NPR advance quality journalism in the digital age. More at knightfoundation.org. Cartoonist, playwright, and author Jules Pfeiffer talks to Diane Rehm today about how he went from the self-described wimpy kid from the Bronx to one of the 20th century's most famous voices of satire and dissent. Backing into Forward is the name of the broadcast. It is an encore presentation for Diane Rehm Show, and that's coming up in about 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE, that's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or WFAE.org/CharlotteTalks.
New smartphone apps aim to keep people from driving and texting at the same time, and that's great and all, but don't you have to use the phone to turn on the app?
You can activate a feature where every time a text comes in, it will read it to you, and that part works fine. It's answering back that becomes a real problem.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Both hands on the wheel, please. Story is next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
That's Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 FM WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and in our Spirit Square studio, Jane McIntyre and Russell Schwartz. She is the executive director. He is the vice president of administration for United Way of the Central Carolinas. Jeff in Matthews writes, I still do not trust United Way with my contributions because of the misuse. Please ask your guest, Ms. McIntyre, exactly what percentage of the contributed funds get to people being helped versus overhead and operations. And I was going to get to that, so let's talk about
it now.
Okay,
let's do. The previous overhead, I went back and looked exactly. The overhead was projected for last year when I went at 19-point-something%. And we finished, this year when we file the 990, which will be, we actually will be finished with it in December, I believe, of this year. The overhead is about 13.7.
And that, you know, there are two factors in overhead. One is total revenue, the other is total cost. And when revenue dropped as precipitously as it did in 08, 09, you couldn't cut costs fast enough to keep the overhead number low. Mm-hmm. So the big factor in that 19% area was the reduction in revenue.
19-20% sounds high to me. 13% doesn't.
Well,
is that accurate?
Yeah.
In the real world?
From my perspective, you would want to be under 15%, and that's certainly where we're headed.
And I would tell you that any nonprofit that is running a true overhead of under 20 is doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
It is tough. I haven't run one to really keep it under 20, just because there are a lot of fixed costs that are not related directly to programs. I mean, you've got to have a payroll process. You've got to have employee benefits. You need a chief financial officer, even if it's part-time. You've got some human resource expenses. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of expenses that
you've
are
got electricity. You've got to heat the building.
But you don't need 8 refrigerators.
Correct.
The Observer did an article about this a couple of weeks ago. I don't know when it was.
You know, and he quoted me. He and I had just spoken in the hall, and I was mentioning the refrigerators. And I should hasten to say that there was a reason for them when you had over 100 employees in the building, and you had so many volunteer events with hundreds of people in the building. And we had at that time donated beverages of Coke products and water products, and you had to have a place to keep them cold. But, you know, when you reduce the number of employees...
Right. Well, you cut the number of employees by half, and now you've cut the number of refrigerators by half. What happened to the 4 refrigerators you got rid of?
They were offered to our member agencies as donations for their use by clients or by the agencies themselves.
And it sounds silly to talk about refrigerators, but is that illustrative of the fine-tooth comb that you're using?
Well, I mean, every refrigerator is almost $350 a year of electricity.
Really?
Yep.
I'm going to turn mine off today.
Listen, and Mike, I learned something else from Russell. You're going to love this. When a refrigerator, well, I didn't know this, I guess, but when a refrigerator is empty, which many of these were, it uses even more electricity. So Russell pointed out that the one in our garage at home that we really love that's not full is costing more than the one inside.
Wow. Okay.
My father was an engineer, Mike.
That's a burden you'll have to bear. Here's another comment, anonymous from a mobile phone. There is currently no diversity on the United Way leadership team. Why is that?
There is diversity with age, and there is
gender, race.
I don't know what
aspect we're missing with regard to diversity.
Okay. Well,
Chris Jackson, who's chaired our community building in that whole area, actually announced last week that he is going to Goodwill. So that may be somebody internally. But we are very...
Chris is an African-American male who's now going to work with one of our member agencies as of November. So Maybe that is somebody internally that is concerned that we've lost that voice or will be losing that voice at the end of the month.
And, you know, Mike, we didn't respond to the first comment, and I'm sorry he did not trust, but I do understand.
Okay. And you're trying to rebuild that trust. Part of rebuilding that trust is getting the word out that changes are being made and what exactly those changes are. And off the air, you told me that it comes down to something very simple.
Yes, it does. It's and this has been kind of a finding, but it's so basic, is just tell the truth, tell people what you're doing, and then do it, and do it right. And I think that's true of the world. I think it's the world we live in.
So if Jeff and Matthews, who wrote about not having trust in the United Way, was truly interested in finding out what you were up to, he could just find that out? How would he find that out?
He can find out. He can come to a board meeting. We allow.
It's open to the public?
It is open to the public, and we even allow cameras in. And this new board was really nervous about cameras. And I have to tell you, they forget they're there.
Cameras, tape recorders.
Let's tell the Supreme Court that.
Yes. Well, that may be a while.
So anybody can come to a board
meeting.
Absolutely. They can't participate, but they can come and listen.
Right. They can just listen. We've had staff come. We have had some of our companies who had volunteers that were running internal campaigns. Uh-huh. They have attended.
Does anybody else do it this way? I mean, anybody.
I don't know. Well.
Was this your idea? To open the doors?
They had opened the doors, the cameras. Uh-huh. I encouraged them to let the cameras in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Another anonymous comment. I respect Ms. McIntyre and her courage in taking the United Way of the Central Carolinas job at a very challenging time. However, I still question the value add of United Way as a pass-through for organizations. Why shouldn't donors give directly, especially now when UWCC no longer has the staff to assess the effectiveness of the programs that it funds?
That is a great question, and it is a question that the agencies answered for us. And what they told us when we asked that very specific question is they do not have the infrastructure nor the capacity to raise the kind of ongoing funding every year that United Way provides for them. So it is critical. They still have to raise money. Every single organization still has an obligation to raise their individual pledges, but they are absolutely dependent and should be, to a certain degree, to have it done this way.
And the other side of that coin is what gave birth to what used to be the United Givers Fund, which is the original organization.
Community Chest, it had a number of
names. Was that the idea that 97 agencies were suddenly knocking on the door of the Bank of America or somebody's law firm asking for money became unwieldy?
I think it was the solicitation of employees. Anyone that's run even a small organization knows you do not want everybody and his brother soliciting your employees. And so it's really almost a way to collectively give. Payroll deduction is, I think it's wonderful because it's sort of painless to a certain degree. You give it each
you
payroll,
it.
At the end of the day, you've given a very significant gift.
You know, it was a great question, and it's multifaceted. One, with regard to the effectiveness, if staff has been reduced, in terms of the allocation of the funding, we have over 200 volunteers who participate in that process. It's a fairly intense process. We do the preliminary work in terms of getting the audits. If you're a partner agency, you have to provide us an audit. You have to provide us your 990, which is basically the tax return for a nonprofit. There's a certain financial certification process that staff gathers the information for. That's provided to the volunteers.
With your reduction in staff, though, how effective, how much time do you have to linger over those reports and those audits?
Well, happily, we have some great volunteers. We have a CPA who specialized with Deloitte in nonprofits who comes in and then does an internal audit of all of the agency audits. So we've leveraged the volunteer aspect, those who want to help the community by volunteering their time. The other important aspect of that question is why not just give directly to the agency?
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of the theme that of this year's campaign, which I talked about last year when I met with people, is the Community Care Fund is sort of a mutual fund of caring. You know, everyone has a 401k and you have a favorite stock, but you still invest in a mutual fund to distribute your risk. It's the same thing with the Community Care Fund. There's an individual. My wife works for a partner agency. Laurie works at a Child's Place. Well, why would I not give all my money to where my wife works? Because her agency, which deals with homeless children in the public schools, relies on the work of so many other agencies to help those client families. Mm-hmm. Poverty and need are not a single dimension issue. There are multidimensional problems. So many of our folks that our partner agencies work with six different agencies, five different agencies, eight different agencies, and some of these agencies are very small. There's an agency which helps people as they come out of incarceration. Okay, well, those people are frequently parents of children. There may be children that are being helped by the Council for Children's Rights. Well, if somebody isn't helping those parents when they come out of incarceration, what is the future for those children? Now, is it a popular issue to say, I would like you to give me money to help this woman transition from prison? That's not a very popular issue. It's not a huge agency. They don't have a fundraising department. How are they going to function without the United Way? And if they don't exist, then what does the Council for Children's Rights do with those kids? Mm-hmm. Because nobody's there to help the parents. So it's a community. There is. If I wish there was a single agency that would solve poverty, need, education, want, hunger, but no single agency can do it.
Is this a story that's been effectively told?
I don't think it could ever be effectively told like we want it to be told. But I will tell you that we, the staff and the volunteers, but predominantly staff, run 1,000 workplace campaigns. Mm-hmm. I could not believe the number, 1,000. That is a huge number. And these are companies throughout this five-county region that honestly probably would not give to individual agencies. They would probably, in many cases, not have a collective giving campaign were it not for United Way. Mm-hmm. That's just another.
Tom, writing from Mooresville, asks, if I donate to the United Way but specify that the funds be directed to a specific agency, how much of the money goes to the agency versus the general United Way fund? I give to the Ronald McDonald House of Winston-Salem through the United Way.
It goes, all of it. But now, the Ronald McDonald House...
It's not a United Way partner agency, so there is a process.
We would charge a fee to process that mail, because you have to mail the payment.
But if you do earmark your contribution to United Way to a specific recipient agency that you do business with, there is overhead at the United Way. So some of that 13% goes away.
I think it's 12%. Okay. Is what we charge a fee.
Let's take a phone call. Put your headphones on from. We go to York, South Carolina. So, does the United Way of Central Carolina's deal with South Carolina?
We give money there, but okay. It's not our organization.
Let's go to Tom in York. Welcome, Tom.
Good morning. I'd like to say to the folks there that many of their corporate donors' corporate social policies have changed dramatically over the last, say, 10 or 15 years. What do you plan on doing about the discriminatory policies of some of your organizations, like the Boy Scouts and Salvation Army have against gay people? It would seem to me that, especially the Scouts, the way they discriminate against gay kids could certainly lead to bullying.
I have a similar email comment here from Mike, who says, I wanted to relay the reason to Ms. McIntyre of why I refuse to donate. Of the 93 organizations listed, four of them openly discriminate against homosexuals and atheists. I am referring to the Boy Scouts of America. To support the organization that will allow open discrimination against kids is hardly encouraging a feeling of community. To illustrate my point, the BSA's bigotry toward atheists appears directly on the youth membership application, and he quotes the application. The Boy Scouts of America maintains that no member can grow into the best kind of citizen without recognizing an obligation to God, and therefore recognizes the religious element in the training of the member.
Regarding the gay issue and the Boy Scouts, we fund very specific programs there. They're in high-risk neighborhoods. I have a personal experience of having them in public housing and having scouting troops. And I can tell you, in all of those incidences, there was no discrimination, gay or lesbian students.
You know, the gentleman said before about the diversity within the United Way organization. Do you have any gay people on your board?
You know, Tom, we don't actually ask people about their sexual orientation, so I don't know that.
But I would guess that we may, and I would guess that we do in our staffing as well.
Okay,
Tom. Thanks. Thank you for a call. You've made 51 changes, well, probably more than that, but you have a list here of 51 changes that you're still adding to slowly but surely. You have eliminated long-term disability as a paid benefit for employees. You've eliminated the physical fitness benefit. You've reduced the education benefit and reduced and redesigned insurance benefits. That seems to me to be a lot of money being saved.
Yeah, it has. Oh, it's over.
What's it done to morale?
100,000. I think morale took a hit. I think that at any time you have something and then you don't have it, you feel as if, you know, something's been taken away from you, which literally it has. I think that's all part of, again, refocusing from the internal back to focus on the donors, the agencies, and the volunteers.
Now, I want to get back to Mike's email because he had a question that I didn't ask you. The question is, when will the United Way adopt a non-discrimination policy that will weed out organizations that openly discriminate against members of the community that the United Way wishes to help? What criteria does the United Way use to evaluate the policies of the organizations it decides to fundraise for?
We watch it very carefully. We're looking at everything. I actually think most of them have policies, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and United Way Worldwide has a list of requirements, which is lengthy. Mm-hmm. I think that it's you don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater and say, okay, just to use the Boy Scout example, we are not going to fund this program at a housing project because you've discriminated against gays in some of your programs. Because, you know, how does that help the young man who's in the housing project, who's trying to find an activity? So I think that we continue to work with all of our agencies to be open and fair to all segments of the community, but our focus, again, is on need.
And I would say, excuse me, this is an issue I'm very sensitive to, and I would say that I have not seen it at all in this particular scout.
You've made a lot of changes, and you continue to make changes and analyze the organization for necessary changes. How do you know when you're done?
Oh, we'll never be finished.
Never.
Never.
Jay McIntyre is Executive Director. Russell Schwartz is Vice President of Administration of United Way of the Central Carolinas, an organization that's become increasingly more open. And you can find out that blue. How do you get to the blue book? Very quickly. Is it just unitedway.org?
It's uwcentralcarolinas.org.
Okay. A lot of information there. Thank you all for being here.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins.